Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you are comforted by the techno wizardry of the coroner's offices depicted on television crime shows, you shouldn't be. According to a report to air Tuesday at 9 p.m. on PBS, the report is a collaboration between Frontline, ProPublica, NPR, and the investigative reporting program at UC Berkeley. Such operations are a rarity, and in many places, what counts for a coroner might surprise you. Almost everywhere in the United States, coroners operate without special training, many with little or no medical or scientific background, and there is little to no oversight. Joining us later on in the program will be Dr. Jan Gorniak, Franklin County's first full-time forensic pathologist coroner. Also coming up is Dr. David Applegate. He's the elected coroner of Union County in Ohio, and he's also board chairman and immediate past president of the Ohio State Coroners Association. Joining us now for a preview of tonight's Frontline Report post-mortem is Lowell Bergman. Lowell is a producer correspondent for Frontline, and he's received honors in both print and broadcasting, including the Pulitzer Prize for Public Service awarded to the New York Times. He's the recipient of numerous Emmys and three Peabodys. You will see him in action tonight at 9 p.m. on WOSU Television. Welcome to the show, Lowell.
Thanks for having me.
The program takes a close look at the coroner for New Orleans, whose operation has been called into question many times over his career, many decade career in the elective office. Is he typical or just more visible? And what can we learn from those kinds of stories?
Well, Frank Mignard is a doctor, but he's not, as your local coroner is, a forensic pathologist. He was an OBGYN, an obstetrician. And he was first elected back in 1976, so he's the longest-serving big city coroner. Most major metropolitan areas in the United States have medical examiners or stricter, let's say, requirements for the coroner than in New Orleans. And what we can learn from it is that there are questions raised, because he is a politician, even though he denies it on camera, about his decisions when it comes to, for example, in-custody deaths or deaths at the hands of the police. And that's been going on since I first met him back in 1993.
I was interested to listen on BBC this morning. They did quite an extensive report on New Orleans. They have a new chief of police. They're trying to change things up, but they didn't mention whether the coroner was still around.
Well, that's because most people don't even know who their coroner is, and is one of the medical examiners we interview says on camera, most people don't know who it is they are voting for. How do they determine whether a coroner is somebody worth voting for or not? And the requirements differ for that office depending upon where you are. As you'll see in the film, we go to South Carolina, where there was a man who's been a coroner for 26 years in a rural county. One of his predecessors was blind. His requirements for getting an office were simply to be elected after the sort of high-profile scandal, if you will, around something that happened in his county with Michael Jordan's father. Mm-hmm. About 15 years ago, the state reformed the requirements and require now that you have a high school diploma.
He is, of course, grandfathered in on that.
Yeah, he actually went to junior college, so he's somewhat more qualified than some of the other people in the state.
So then, for most places and in most places, is a coroner, as an elective official, just an administrator? I mean, isn't that okay if they're just an administrator? What difference does it make?
I would say that that would be fine. And in places like Las Vegas, for instance, there is a very, if you will, honored and accredited coroner's office that operates just that way, who someone is appointed. I think the real question is, who's qualified to sign the death certificate to determine the cause of the manner of death? You may have a doctor who comes up with one or more opinions after an autopsy, but someone has to interpret that. And that's the main objection raised by the National Academy of Sciences in a report that came out 2 years ago. And by the way, they've been trying to change the system since 1928. It's the political power of many coroners in different states that keeps them in power. And in some places, like Ohio, there actually are real qualifications for being coroner. It's somewhat unusual, and Ohio in particular has a pretty good reputation.
The National Academy of Scientists study has recommended the abolition of coroners in the United States, but there's a big problem. And even the Las Vegas coroner, I think the model, as it were, for a lot of those crime shows, has doubts about any success in changing the system. Let's listen.
I don't think the system could function without the coroners at this particular time.
Well, this report, that's what it's all about. Get rid of coroners.
But the first thing you're going to have to do is make sure you have enough forensic pathologists. And if you don't have that, I think the system would start to crumble.
Of course, that's you, Lowell, the other person. There's a huge demand for this, but little supply. Why is that?
Well, there's a whole bunch of different reasons. One is it's one branch of medicine which the federal government has no role in. There's no National Institute of Health that's, for example, or division of it that's dedicated to forensic pathology, which is the science, if you will, of death. The pay is relatively low. The many states allow people who are not forensic pathologists to conduct autopsies. And I believe, for instance, in Ohio, for example, you will find, as we found in, I think, 10 of the major counties in the United States, there are people who are not board-certified forensic pathologists who are doing autopsies. So it's ironic because it's the opposite of the fiction version. In other words, the nonfiction is a reality that shows uneven results, uneven standards all across the country. We have this fictionalized glorification of death investigations in CSI, or if you go back to Quincy, or any numbers of best-selling novels, of this all being high-tech, brilliant people doing it with all the resources they could want.
That's the other problem. There are not enough trained people, and there are a way big shortage of resources.
Right. But there are not enough trained people in that there are 450 to 500 forensic pathologists. That's an estimate. No one really knows.
Total in the whole country.
Practicing in the country. And the minimum needed for the whole country is estimated at least 1,000. And there is no, for instance, support for a board certification in forensic pathology from the federal government. There's very little federal funds available for death investigators throughout the country. There's a little bit of federal money for facilities, nothing for training, nothing for upgrading, no national standards, and no one looking over their shoulders on a national basis.
So of all the things we regulate in this country, and some people would argue too much, but be that as it may, of all the things, we don't regulate one iota of this profession. Why is that? How has it gone?
It's fallen through the cracks, if you will. There is national accreditation, for instance, for hospitals or for the laboratory that your blood is sent to give you your annual physical, for instance. There is no national regulation of death investigation offices. There is no national regulation of who can do autopsies and how qualified they are. There is no way to keep track of someone, as we show in this documentary, of someone who continually gets in trouble, makes mistakes, is a subject of publicity, let's say in Indiana and then Kansas City, and then is practicing in California.
Where that particular person botched another autopsy and they said, oh, well, and they just kept, he keeps working there.
Well, he keeps working there. He went to Kansas City from there until he made news there.
Right.
But the reality is that what you have is guilty people walk and innocent people go to jail.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org if you would like to join the conversation. My guest is Lowell Bergman. He's a correspondent for Frontline, and tomorrow night, Frontline is airing a report on the state of forensic science in the United States today. It's patchy at best and lacking credibility altogether in some places, and a lot of that depends on the fact that coroners mostly are elected officials. So, Lowell, the movement to eliminate the election of coroners, what are the pros and cons of that?
Well, as is pointed out, there aren't enough forensic pathologists to take their place, so you'd have to train all of those people. It appears that from a financial point of view that in gross dollars it wouldn't make that much difference. Because the number of coroner's offices, there are over 1,500 in the United States. I think 1,300 of those are elected. The result would be to centralize, have state medical examiners or regional medical examiner offices like you have in New Mexico or Florida or Virginia. Or, for instance, New York City has had considered one of the best medical examiner's offices for almost 100 years. So there are different parts of the country that can be a model for a standardized national system, or at least statewide systems that can back people up. As you'll see in the example in South Carolina, the coroner did not have access to an adequate refrigerator to store a body, and had to cremate it, and then only later finds out that it's the father of a celebrity. But we ran into cases like this across the country.
Aren't a lot of states already de facto regionalized? I mean, a lot of people in Ohio, county coroners in Ohio routinely send their autopsy work to cities like Columbus or Cleveland for the work, and they pay for it.
Right. There are states like Ohio where the coroner system is comparable to a medical examiner system, even though the coroner is elected. That's one reason for that was a pioneering efforts by the coroner in Cleveland many years ago to create a system that had a higher standard, and he in turn resisted the imposition of medical examiners, appointed officials. And so if you look at your state law, there are relatively high qualifications, educational requirements for, let's say, a medical doctor who becomes coroner, and other requirements. But you won't find that. What happens across the United States is that where you die, could be across a state line, a couple of feet, will determine how your body will be handled and who will examine it, or that of a loved one, the quality of the work that's done. For instance, in many areas like Los Angeles, we pointed out that the lack of funding, the general situation in Los Angeles is that only 1 in 3 people are ever seen by even an investigator from the coroner's office. So as they say, and as we point out, in nursing homes and other assisted living facilities, there are people dying who, in fact, were tortured or murdered.
And nobody ever knew.
Nobody knows. They get buried.
Well, Lowell Bergman, Frontline correspondent, I want to thank you for joining the show today.
Thank you.
Again, it's Lowell Bergman of Frontline. Frontline's airing a report on PBS tomorrow night that says the state of forensic science in America today is patchy at best. Coming up in a few minutes, Franklin County Coroner Dr. Jan Gorniak. Dr. Gorniak served as a deputy coroner and forensic pathologist in Franklin County from 2005 to 2008 when she was elected to the job of county coroner. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and this afternoon at 1 o'clock, On Point begins with an update on Egypt. All eyes are on the country of Egypt, and On Point gets the latest. Join us for that discussion this afternoon at 1. It's currently 21 degrees in downtown Columbus, increasing clouds with a high of 30 today. And then a wintry mix moving into the area, a chance of snow, freezing rain, and sleet, and a low of 29 degrees tonight. Rain and freezing rain for Tuesday. We could see an ice accumulation as well, a high of 33 degrees for Tuesday. And WOSU invites you to the 18th Annual Champion of Children Panel Discussion, Awards Presentation, and Reception. The event is Tuesday, February 8th at WOSU at COSI. And the televised news panel discussion is moderated by Fred Anderley. It begins at 4:30. More information available at liveunitedcentralohio.org. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about the state of forensic science in the United States. Our last guest was Lowell Bergman of Frontline. He's airing a report on PBS television tomorrow night, WOSU television for your purposes, tomorrow night, that says the state of forensic science in America today is patchy, lacking credibility in some places altogether. A lot of that depends on the fact that coroners mostly are elected officials without uniform job requirements or oversight. Joining us now is Franklin County Coroner Dr. Jan Gorniak. Dr. Gorniak served as a deputy coroner and forensic pathologist in Franklin County for about 3 years until 2008 when she was elected to the position of Franklin County Coroner in November 2008, and now is the county's first full-time forensic pathologist. coroner. Dr. Gorniak trained in anatomic pathology and forensic pathology and is certified by the American Board of Pathology. She still performs autopsies along with her administrative duties. Welcome to the show, Dr. Gorniak.
Thank you.
Also with us is Dr. David Applegate. Dr. Applegate is board certified in family medicine. He's in a private practice in Marysville. He also teaches at the Ohio State University College of Medicine. He's a retired obstetrician, and he's also the elected coroner for Union County and board chairman and immediate past president of the Ohio State Coroners Association. Welcome to the show, Dr. Applegate.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the pros and cons, the virtue of having an elected county coroner. Why is that important? Why is it continued? Dr. Applegate?
Well, I think it's more historical than anything. Ohio has a home rule philosophy where we have local sheriffs, local prosecutors, local treasurers, and county commissioners, and it continues from there. I think it gives the advantage of having a local specialist being able to investigate deaths, whether they're natural or unnatural. So I think it adds to that. Ohio has pushed to have the credentialing of coroners so that we do get quality individuals, and it's just not somebody who is, you know, off doing the job. So we have coroners in Ohio, and they're physicians, and who have been trained and are required to continually train each year. So can it be done another way? Sure. But I think historically we've done it this way. We've got a system that works, and redoing the system for a huge expense, or I'm not sure is worth it.
What would be the expense in ending the elections of coroners and just having them operate under the auspices of another arm of government with just the trained pathologists and forensic pathologists, that sort of thing?
Well, I think you still have to have investigators locally. I mean, the autopsy can determine the cause of death, but how the manner is certainly has to have a local investigation, whether you get records from a family doctor or from a specialist, or they have work with law enforcement. Many deaths, occupational deaths, suicides are not crimes, and law enforcement doesn't necessarily want to be involved in those. So somebody still has to look at them. And there can be what appears to be a suicide that actually is a cover-up homicide. And so until somebody figures it out, that, you know, sometimes law enforcement's not there. So you may change the form of government to have pathologists or medical examiners in the state, but you're still going to have to hire investigators. You're going to still have to hire people to do local investigations.
Dr. Gorniak, you were elected. Before that, you worked as a deputy coroner for Franklin County. And it wasn't like it was exactly a landslide, even though you were running against someone with a shadow of the qualifications that you possess. How do you feel about the idea of being elected coroner?
Well, it's nice part of it to be able to educate the public. So when you have an appointed position as a medical examiner, it's a committee that sits behind closed doors and makes that decision. So in a way, at least the public is being educated, and then they obviously it's an election, so they have to hopefully choose the right person for the job and not just for a name.
You are certified by the American Board of Pathology in anatomical forensic pathology. What did you do to earn that certification? What extra education was involved?
Okay, after graduating from medical school, I did a residency at first I did an internship. So I did a rotating internship. So I've delivered babies, worked in the emergency room, you know, worked on the floors for a year. And then I did 3 years of anatomic pathology in the hospital, and we're the ones that are looking at, you know, when someone has a biopsy or they get their appendix taken out, we're the ones that are looking at that. So after 3 years of training in basic pathology, then I did an extra year of forensics where I were doing more autopsies and then looking at determination of cause of death more so than just diagnosing diseases. And then part of my training was also to go out to scenes and work with the detectives at the scene.
And we were talking earlier about the shortage, that there's only maybe, and no one's exactly sure, 400 or 500 forensic pathologists, trained forensic pathologists out there. What was the attraction for you, and why do you think more physicians don't go for that extra training?
Well, I enjoyed the field from years ago when I watched Quincy.
Right.
So I just thought it was a fascinating field. But most people, when you think, I mean, We're forensic pathologists. We deal with dead people. That's not why people go to medical school. You know, they're going to save lives and make a difference. We're saving not our patient's life, but we can save lives of other people. And it's people don't go into it. It's not a glamorous job. It's mostly a government job, so the pay's not well. So you can be an anatomic pathologist, a surgical pathologist, or a cardiologist and go work in a hospital and make 2-3 times as much as a forensic pathologist would make.
My guests are Dr. David Applegate. He is president of the Ohio State Coroners Association, and also Dr. Jan Gorniak. She's Franklin County Coroner. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Dr. Applegate, what sort of training does a coroner get in Ohio after they're elected?
Well, the Ohio Revised Code mandates that we have to have 20 hours of education to learn the office, and that includes learning the revised code. We fall under Chapter 313, and we need to know that inside out, where we get our authority and where our limitations are and things that are mandated on us. And then that section of code also requires attendance at annual meetings and continuing education in forensic sciences for the coroner. So they have to continue to get 20 hours a year and do regional meetings and state meetings. They can ask for permission to go to outside courses and get that count as well. So we are also in the middle of encouraging every investigator in the state to be certified, and then we're trying to get every office, every county in the state to be accredited. So those are, while those aren't mandated by the law, we're, as an organization, pushing that philosophy and trying to get quality to be the name of the game.
If it was mandated, wouldn't it pare the field even more because it would require extra education?
That's a potential problem. It is. Anytime you raise the bar, it thins out the group. The more you can see as just computers come into the regular family doctor's office, some of the older family doctors are getting out. It's a big change. So anytime you change the job, it changes it. I think it may open it up as for other people to want to do it because it's more of an exact science at that point, or it's more. So I think there'll be a wash. You'll lose some people, but other people will have an interest.
Because it'll become seemingly more professionalized?
Correct.
In Ashland County last year, now there's a new coroner in Ashland County now, but last spring there was quite a kerfuffle over the county coroner there who said, you're not giving me enough money to do the job. I can't do the job. And he started to overspend. He's limited by law to spend a certain amount of money or only half of his budget in a half of the fiscal year. And he had overspent at that point. And he said, there's just simply not enough money. As the coroner in Union County, are you satisfied that you're adequately funded to do the job they're asking you to do?
I think that you're referring to the Ashtabula County.
Ashtabula, I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. Thank you. Sorry.
I do an adequate job here. It was certainly easier to do the job. I don't think I had any problems 4 or 5 years ago, but with the current budget crunches, I feel strained, I would have to say, with having appropriate budgeting. I hate to be negative toward the county commissioners. They've given me most of what I've asked, but I've also pared back just as other offices have. So, I'm sure the question could be put to the engineers if they're rebuilding our bridges as fast as they'd like, and they'd probably say no. But so, no, I'm not happy with my budget, but we're doing the best we can, and that's something that taxpayers have to decide how much money they want to pay to a system, whether it's engineers or death investigation.
Yeah, and I don't want to be driving across that crunchy old bridge, you know, when it falls either, but Lowell Bergman of Frontline made the point that depending on where you live has a lot to do with whether or not you're going to get a fair shot if you die.
I agree. I mean, that's a problem in Ohio. Some of the poorer counties don't have the budgets, and the county commissioners don't view the death investigation as important as it is in other counties. So the coroner may have the best of intentions, but be handicapped by a budget that, you know, is just a dismal.
Dr. Gruniak, in Franklin County, you do autopsies for other counties that don't have the labs that you have. And Ashtabula, in fact, you know, farms out its autopsies already. And one of the problems was, is I think it was Cuyahoga County saying, we want our money and we want it now. What is it like bill collecting on autopsies that you do?
Well, what's difficult, because it's not only them sending their autopsies to us, because they get to pick and choose which ones they want to send for autopsy. Mm-hmm. But there's also part of the law that says if an injury occurred in a county, then we can bill them for that autopsy. So someone gets into a car crash in Licking County, but they get life flighted to hospital here, the trauma center here, and they end up dying here.
Okay.
We're going to perform that autopsy, and by law, then we can charge them for that. So it's not the ones
there's
that
there's not a lot of choice then.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's not the ones that they are sending. It's the ones that, you know, where they end up making it to a level one trauma center. You know, so you're talking about the big cities that have those. But, you know, we bill and we get what we get. And we're, you know.
Meaning we not always all what you're due, but.
Correct.
And there's no recourse.
No, there's not.
Dr. Applegate, do you want to say something?
Well, that's a problem we recognize, and that's part of the funding problem in Ohio. You know, everybody's got their own viewpoints. Every time I think about ordering an autopsy, I have to worry about spending $1,500. Dr. Gruniak, when she doesn't think necessarily in the dollars it costs, because she's got a set staff, so that's a great advantage she has. I empathize with her for having to send a bill out every time I get a bill from Franklin County or from some other county that the injury occurred. I kind of have to go through it to make sure that my county's not paying for something it shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I understand some of the counties aren't that agreeable. They just don't want to pay for anything. And it's partly because that then takes money out of their budget to pick to allow them to do autopsies that they would want to do on their own. So the system is not set up perfectly, and we're trying to figure out how to fund it. We've got a good regional system it's set up, but the funding strategies need to be really looked at. There's no doubt about that, because there's some counties just can't afford to do what they should be doing, and the larger counties are okay, but they still have their, you know, sometimes we hear from the larger counties that they don't like supporting all the smaller counties,
mm-hmm.
and that's a problem.
Dr. Gruniak?
And also when we're going to the commissioners and we're having our budget talks, it's not, we can't say, well, how many autopsies do you plan to do next year?
Right.
We don't know. And so it's hard to give them a number, and that's what they're looking at. But, you know, I might have done, you know, 800 autopsies last year, but that didn't include what might, you know, God forbid there's a plane crash or a house fire or collapse. You just never know. And I don't think that the commissioners really understand that, and why I think we work in Ohio, and plus having someone like myself, forensic pathologist, I know what to say. I know how to fight for our needs and try to get them to understand why it's important that we have this money.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to join the conversation, I have a question for my guests, Dr. David Applegate. He's president of the Ohio State Coroners Association. He's also the Union County coroner. Also, Dr. Jan Gruniak, Franklin County's coroner. And Victor from Canton, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I had a comment. We were talking about how CSI and all these TV, they really glamorize. I used to be a big fan of the David Caruso and CSI Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like Without a Trace and stuff. But my point was, real quickly, it seems that we tend to live out. If you watch these shows, Law and Order and whatnot, and then you see courts, it seems that people, like in hospitals, that, you know, when soap operas were big, they became like the soap opera, and it just became like a facade. My point is that at the beginning, you must first have honesty. And my point is, you go back to 2006, and you look at the front page of Clarence Elkins, and he had a whole front page write-up on Vindicated and all the stuff that he went through. And
this
and
was the fellow who was vindicated for murder.
Yeah, 7.5 years in Mansfield Prison.
Right.
found the cigarette butt of an inmate that happened to commit a crime and was in prison. Turned out that he was the one that committed the crime. Meanwhile, while he was overlooked, he was committing other crimes while Elkin spent 7.5 years in prison. So they tried to not make that happen because somewhere along the line somebody didn't do their job, which comes down to honesty.
Well, that
my point is down in the lower right-hand corner of that front page of the Canton Repository, mm-hmm. you're going to see two men. One did 13 years in prison and one did 19 years in prison. And they were vindicated on DNA evidence, which is very important. I don't know why we don't really kind of, other than the invasion of privacy, do this at birth.
So what's your point, though, Victor?
My point is it all comes back to honesty, because in the lower right-hand corner of that paper, it was two black men, and they had a little tiny corner of a write-up, and both of them had did 2 and 3 times the prison that Elkins had did. My point is everybody is slipping through the cracks when it comes to people being so motivated by career and wanting advancement that, and then with money, they tend to overlook the facts and half-step on their job when criminal investigation is so very important to, because the investigator themselves could be looking at a family member, but they don't put themselves, what's lacking is empathy.
Okay.
They don't put themselves in that shoe. So I think if we go back to honesty with budgets, because coroners are overworked, definitely underpaid. Investigators, they need more, less loopholes. There's too many attorneys out there fighting for the bad guy. And then when the actual innocent people go to prison, they try to cover that up. They'll use the DNA now for a case going on now, but they don't want to go back in time and challenge and have to deal with lawsuits and all that other stuff. But I think if we could get back to honesty.
Okay, thanks, Victor from Canton. Thanks for that call. Victor brought up a couple different issues. One that resonates still with the conversation is the cost. I mean, how, Dr. Applegate, from your perspective, are you ever torn about seeking an autopsy, sending an autopsy to Columbus or another county with a lab that can accommodate you, and knowing that when you're not quite sure, it could maybe cut either way, and it's going to cost you money.
That has been a issue in the last year or so for us, and it's been much more of an issue for many other counties. I fortunately come from a county that has not been hit the hardest economically, so we know it's a problem, and you can't do everybody, autopsying everyone. I can't tell you the number of times I've done autopsies and been totally surprised by the outcome, the findings for the cause of death. So I learn from them all the time. So I think there's a lot of value. It helps closure with families, and it also helps with public health needs as to why people are dying and where we're spending our money and is a good resource. So I think there's lots of value to a good death investigation system. But you know, the cost of it is a burden sometimes. And, you know, do we save it for just the ones that were, if there might be a lawsuit or a criminal trial involved versus, you know, the other times where it appears to be more natural or appears to be an obvious suicide? Those come in. Our car wrecks are a good example. It's obviously there's trauma to the body. Do we perform an autopsy? Or maybe that person had a heart attack before the car wreck occurred, and it had nothing to do with the trauma of the accident that caused the death. You don't know that when you cut those out. So maybe there are drugs involved, that they were sedated. They didn't die from a drug overdose, but they were taking medications that caused the problem. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's a problem. There probably will never be enough money in any kind of government role, but it's certainly an issue now.
We have to take another break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. David Applegate of the Ohio State Coroners Association. He's also the Union County Coroner. And Dr. Jan Gorniak, she's our Franklin County Coroner. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, the Black Keys. Their recent album, Brothers, has been nominated for 4 Grammys. Their songs have been used in the films Zombieland and the Twilight Saga Eclipse, as well as in the HBO series Eastbound and Down and Big Love. Join us.
I must admit, I can't explain.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon. This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today. And Tuesday night on WOSU-TV, Pioneers of Television offers the inside stories of visionaries who helped shape the first TV crime dramas. Bill Cosby talks about his start in the television show I Spy. Learn the secrets behind the hit show Mission Impossible. And James Garner, in his only recent interview, recounts the success of the Rockford Files reluctant crime solver. Watch Pioneers of Television Crime Dramas. It's Tuesday night at 8 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Kappa, presenting Drumline Live. The music team behind the movie Drumline brings the explosive energy of their 39-member cast to the stage February 1st at the Palace Theater. Details and tickets at kappa.com.
21 degrees in downtown Columbus and a winter storm watch in effect this evening through Tuesday afternoon. Increasing clouds today and a high of 30 degrees, and then a wintry mix of freezing rain, sleet, and snow moves into the area tonight, a low of 29. All Science continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Joining us today to talk about the issues of county coroners in the state of Ohio by way of a frontline program on tomorrow night on WOSU television is Dr. Jan Gorniak. She is Franklin County's first forensic pathologist, who is also its elected coroner. And also with us, Dr. David Applegate. He is the elected coroner for Union County, and he's also board chairman and immediate past president of the Ohio State Coroners Association. Sorry, I misspoke earlier, Dr. Applegate. We have an email from a listener. By way of history, the word coroner derives from the Latin word for crown. The coroner is there to represent the interests of the crown, i.e. the government, in order to see that Caesar's justice is done. The Frontline report does look at a couple examples of coroners who appear to be protecting the law enforcement, particularly in the cases of police brutality and police crimes. What kind of pressure, Dr. Gorniak, comes to bear? Columbus is a big city. There's that relationship there. How do you mitigate that?
Well, it's very important for people to know that we work together, not for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference. We, as the coroner's office, we are investigating a death. And like Dr. Applegate said earlier, the police are investigating a crime. We have a saying in forensics: to the living we owe respect, to the dead we owe the truth, no matter what that truth is. And that's how, you know, Victor, I believe his name was speaking about honesty. That's where our foundation is from, too. So we're still speaking for our patient. Whether it doesn't go to court or we have to go to court, we're more concerned about the cause of this person's death and not who did it. That's not our job.
Dr. Applegate, can you, from your perspective, tell us what happens in Union County when there's a death and it's brought to you? How does it work? Do you decide whether or not to investigate, or do the police bring it to you? How does that happen?
Anytime there is a death, whether it's at the hospital or somebody found at home, or there's a car wreck or bodies found somewhere, the sheriff's office dispatcher, or the state highway patrol, or city police will call me, and I'll ask a few basic questions so I know kind of what gear to bring, or if I need to go at all. Most times I will send my investigator, or I'll go personally. But you know, if somebody's 88 years old and is on multiple medications, I will call the family doctor or internist that's taking care of the patient, ask them if they think it's reasonable that they died, and we'll chat about it. And then I'll talk to law enforcement who may be at the scene and ask them if there's anything that seems to be out of the ordinary. So somebody who may be elderly, I may not go to the scene. I'll call the internist or family doctor back and say, would ask them to sign the death certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And then for all the other cases, we'll be there and we'll take jurisdiction of the body. On occasion, we'll find out that it's mostly natural death and ask the family doctor or internist to sign the death certificate. But otherwise, we'll work it through, decide if an autopsy is necessary, I'd say two-thirds of the time we order autopsies. Anytime there's trauma involved or anything suspicious, we'll always do an autopsy. So that's kind of how it works here, where it's a case-by-case review. It's kind of situational. Kind of depends on circumstances. If anything's odd, if the family doctor's unsure about it, we'll go out and do that.
How do you decide which county you're going to send an autopsy to? And no harm, no feelings hurt here.
Well, when I took office 12 years ago, we sent everything to Franklin County, and then had a nice relationship there. Franklin County had some, before Dr. Gorniak took office, they had some issues that made us move on. And so we've been in contract with Licking County. Unfortunately, Licking County only has one pathologist, and so sometimes he's unavailable, and we'll use either Columbus or use Montgomery County. Sometimes it has to do with where the body's from. Sometimes people are just passing through the county, and it's easier if they live in the Dayton area just to send them over to Montgomery County.
Okay.
If we did have somebody who was injured in Columbus and ended up dying at our hospital, and I sent the case back to Dr. Gorniak because it started there. So I usually I also look at the, I guess from an annual basis, we look at the cost. Licking County is a little cheaper, but it costs more money to transport it. So you look at the big picture. And so it's mostly relationships. Dr. Gorniak and I have talked. I really have been counting on her to, to return the Columbus office to a prestigious place. And everybody in Central Ohio, it makes sense that we should be sending their bodies to Franklin County. It makes sense. We not everybody needs to be doing autopsies. We need to concentrate what people do well in places. And it's logical to have Columbus be the go-to place for Central Ohio. So, mm-hmm. Someday I look forward to sending all the bodies back to there.
I guess there's an economies of scale, of course, Dr. Gorniak, when it comes to operating a lab the size of Franklin County. So Licking County is a relatively new lab.
Correct.
Only last 10 years, I think, since they opened up their lab. And, of course, it's probably because they found that they could have the economies of scale that they wanted. But how do you charge for autopsies? How does the billing work with something like that?
Well, we have a flat rate.
Okay.
And that includes not the transport that we don't. We don't transport. That's up to the county that the body originated in. They have to, pay for that. But our cost includes the autopsy, the toxicology, and then obviously we'll have any consults that necessary for them to sign the death certificate, because we're not signing the death certificate when we do the autopsy. Plus, if it's a homicide and we have to go to court, that's all included in that one base price.
So if you have a simple autopsy, you're helping pay for a more complicated one, because they don't all cost you the same to perform.
Correct. But we're paying, obviously it's the salaries of the pathologist,
right,
and the overhead and all that stuff. But you're correct that, not all of them are going to end up in court or be that time consuming. So, yes.
I have to say it's a great deal, too. as much as I complain about the cost, when we look at getting autopsies performed in, like, Ohio State or Wright State University, the medical schools will perform autopsies. They're close to $4,000 when autopsies are in $1,000, $1,200 range at the autopsy at the coroner's offices. So we're getting a benefit, too, in the smaller counties, even though one of my commissioners complain about how much I spend on them, it is still a good deal.
Right, and the commissioners have to realize, like I said before, you don't know what death is going to be the one, and you really do need to investigate it, because you can't go back. And that's you have to get it right on the front side. So if you're not doing the autopsy or you're not doing a complete investigation, you can't go back.
How do you operate a coroner's office like you do in Franklin County, where you're taking in autopsies from lots of different places? How many counties do you serve? How does it all work? How do you shuffle all the business?
Well, we serve probably about like 7 to 10 counties. Some counties are more busy than the others. We might have one autopsy from one county all year, mm-hmm. and another county sending us 15, 20 bodies a year. So, and that's also, of course, in addition to our own caseload in Franklin County. We do approximately 200 cases for other counties, and we make it work.
And in a typical year, how many are being done in your lab?
About 1,000 autopsies a year we do. And I have, including myself, I have four of the pathologists that are performing autopsies.
614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. You have a question or comment for my guests, Dr. Jan Gorniak, the Franklin County Coroner, and also Dr. David Applegate, the Union County Coroner, and also Chairman of the Board of the Ohio State Coroners Association. Give us a call, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, in Ohio, Lowell Bergman of Frontline said Ohio is one of the best. It has some of the highest standards in the country, but still there's calls for higher standards. And one of them, that one standard that none of the states have is mandatory oversight of death investigators in the offices where they work. Dr. Applegate, is that something that the Ohio State Coroners Association advocates for, or is it troubled by the idea of that, or where does the association stand?
No, I think we advocate for it, and I think we actually advocated before all these national referendums have started. We feel at times sometimes challenged that we have a coroner system compared to how it's done other places, and I guess our attitude is that we will win the argument of coroner versus medical examiner based on quality. It works in Ohio. It's not the best, but we're continuing to improve it. So we think an outside agency has to be the one to police it or audit. So we would like to see all counties be accredited to the national standard. And we also think that everyone who does death investigation should be certified to do it. So we're supportive of that. It's not in the law, but that's something, you know, we've talked about. And it's going to take some time. It's going to take probably, you know, 5 years or so.
Who do you have to convince to do that, Dr. Applegate? The lawmakers?
Well, if we want to put it into law, we'll have to convince the legislatures. And then, you know, there's going to be a cost analysis in that. We're right now internally trying to figure out, do we, since not all small counties do the autopsies, do we get larger counties to make sure they go through the higher standards, and then we have umbrella effects for lower counties, mm-hmm. or the counties that don't, that as long as they follow certain protocols and send the bodies in for autopsy, that then they'll be included in an umbrella. It's also these audits or these accreditations are not free. There is an expense to them, and so that's another cost that we're, you know, trying to already in an underfunded system. We're already trying to figure out how to get it done. The other thing we're trying to do is make sure every coroner gets into an electronic database somehow, and that's also with a cost. So we're working on that. So with accreditation, certification, and electronics, I think we're pushing the same standards that is being advocated on a national level.
Dr. Gorniak?
Yes, I agree. And what you're saying, who do you have to convince? We also have to convince ourselves that it's important and be the leader and be the go-to state, coroner state that's working, so we can be the model. So what we're doing in our region here in Central Ohio is having all our coroners become certified or registered death investigators. Mm-hmm. I took the test myself, so I'm not only a forensic pathologist, I'm a registered death investigator also. So that's just one step of showing that we're policing ourselves, and it's the standards that we're setting for ourselves before anybody else sets them for us.
Kathleen from Akron, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'll make this quick because I'd really be interested in hearing this answer. Thanks to our two individuals on the program today. Wonderful job. Thank you. I'm learning a lot. How does one, if someone would wish to observe an autopsy, how is it allowed, and how would one go about it? Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Kathleen. Now, I know the frontline reporters observed autopsies because you can see it in the film, but is it allowed?
Yes, and it's also in the Ohio Vice Code. You have to have a purpose. Of course, with all these shows, people are like, ooh, I want to come see and gawk, and that's not about what it's about at all. I mean, we still have respect for our patients. So we do have medical students, interns, residents, people like that, or, you know, a reporter, because obviously we have to deal with the media on a daily basis, and that's our way to educate the community, too. So how are you going to do a good report if you're not really understanding? So in my office, we allow shadowing mostly for students and people going into health professions.
Dr. Applegate, how did you decide you wanted to run for coroner?
It was never on my bucket list.
Yes. What occurred to you?
We had a coroner that had been in the job for almost 50 years, and he asked me to cover him one weekend, and I didn't think twice about being just out of respect, I said okay. And then there was a suicide, and I got my feet wet.
Mm.
Then he asked me to be his deputy, and I served as his deputy for 5 years. And then he took illness, and all of a sudden I was there. And while it never had an interest, I was amazed the openness that it gave me to families and the involvement and the very much the compassion and the passion and death that was involved. So it struck me in a different medical way, and I was just surprised that I enjoyed it. So I chose to run for the election, and it made it easier. Nobody ran against me, so I didn't have to fight for it. But
and that's not unusual, is it, Dr. Applegate?
No, it's not.
That the candidates run unopposed.
Yeah, that's typical, and that's similar to a lot of other elected offices in counties, in smaller counties.
Right.
In the larger counties, there are more contested battles.
I suppose your greater concern is who you hire to do your investigations, and I suppose, Dr. Gorniak, the same with you. I mean, and there was a question in the Frontline program that airs tomorrow night about that there's no oversight. People can botch an autopsy in one state, move on to another, and get more work, and there's no way to track them nationally or anything like that. Is that something that concerns you as the person who hires?
Oh, absolutely. But you have to do your homework. I mean, we're in the field of investigation, so obviously you want the people who are working for you to be the best. You have to get references and check. You can't get references from 15 years ago. I want to know, who did you work with yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would they say about you? So you have to check, and you have to be aware. So if I'm calling another coroner or medical examiner, they need to be aware of what their people are doing too. So you're not sending, moving one problem to another state. That's not fair.
Dr. Applegate, what do you think about standards for tracking pathologists who have been fired for incompetence?
Well, on the surface, I would say that's a very admirable intent. I think it needs a closely looked at. It's easy to say that, but how you actually do that, it's no different than probably the state medical board trying to make sure every doctor is a good doctor out there. There's lots of emotions that go with that. There's lots of different definitions of what's a good doctor or a good pathologist, and how you monitor, is it based on outcomes, how long does it take to, for problems to show up? It's very difficult. It's a huge challenge to determine competency. And you're also talking about somebody's livelihood. Sometimes we all get desperate and we need a warm body to do the job, and we kind of look the other way on things.
Mm-hmm.
And other times you don't necessarily want to be honest about somebody because you need to either get rid of them or you don't want to lose them. So that's kind of no different in any other line of work of how reputations go and such things. So, yeah, I on the surface, I'd have to say I'd want to have some type of body that demonstrates competency, but I'd be very careful as to how we do it. We may be having a bigger shortage that. So the oversight and trying to – I would rather – While people work on that, I'd also rather to put a system in place that double checks redundancy, and much like airplanes, or you have different ways of making sure the pilot doesn't
checklist.
Yeah, checklist.
Checklist. Well, I want to thank you today for joining us, Dr. David Applegate. He's chairman of the board of the Ohio State Coroners Association and also Union County's elected coroner. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Dr. Jan Gorniak, Franklin County's elected coroner. Dr. Gorniak, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
That's all the time we have. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.